Pastor Dave Rolfe looks at the relationship Moses had with God for inspiration and application.
So you get a rare glimpse of this personal relationship that Moses had with God. It was close. It was intimate. It was deliberate. He went to a specific place, and it was like he and God would have this conversation the way you would have face to face with a dear friend.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
As believers in Christ, we say it often. We have a personal relationship with Christ. But what exactly does that mean? And what does a relationship with God really look like? We get a great picture of that in the story of Moses that we'll look at today on The Balanced Word. Pastor Dave Rolfe is in a unique series where he's going through the Bible, sharing various Bible stories along the way. The story we'll observe today centers around Mount Sinai, where Moses went up on a mountain to hear from the Lord and get the law. It's in Exodus 32 and 33.
We're going through the Old Testament stories this year, and last week we introduced the character of Moses, and he's fascinating. But today, as we look a little deeper, we get some real insights into something that should be vitally important to all of us. And that is, what does a relationship with God look like? We are good as Christians at saying, oh, we're not religious, we have a relationship. So, okay, if that's the case, what does that relationship actually look like in our lives? The story of Moses gives us some great insights into what it looks like to relate to God. Now, last week where we left him, he had been working as a shepherd out in the fields in the Sinai wilderness for the last 40 years. He's 80 years old, and now he's going to change careers, and he's going to deliver Israel from their captivity in Egypt. And so if you read on through the story, through the book of Exodus, you're pretty familiar with what goes down. He goes and demands that Pharaoh release the children of Israel. They won't do it. God starts giving them plagues, a series of plagues. Finally, after the eldest child in every family was killed, Pharaoh said, okay, fine, you can go. And so the children of Israel, probably around 2 million of them, headed out of Egypt. But they just get out of town to the Red Sea, and here come the Egyptians after him. And the Israelis are mad at Moses, like, look, they're going to kill us. And God parted the sea, separated it. They walked across it, and then as the Egyptians chased them, the water came back in. You've seen the movies, and it drowned the Egyptian army. Now, there are people who say, the Red Sea sometimes at certain places only a couple of feet deep. And I go, well, then it's a bigger miracle to drown an Egyptian army in 2 feet of water. So, but that happens, and now they're in the desert. And where they're heading is back where Moses was when he was at the burning bush, right by Mount Sinai, Mount Horeb. So it takes them probably, a couple months to get there, moving with 2 million people. During that time, if you read through the book of Exodus, God is miraculously protecting them with a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. He gives them manna, this food that they're able to eat. Water comes out of a rock, and they're complaining the entire time. They're missing the onions from Egypt. They're missing the security of a life that they knew what to expect. And so Moses is leading these people. They finally came to Mount Sinai. Now, this is hugely important because it was there at Sinai where God defined them as a people. He gave them the law. He gave them all their celebrations and holidays and sacrifices, all the rules of how to live, dietary restrictions, all sorts of things happen there at Mount Sinai. Now, if you turn to Exodus chapter 32, we'll be looking primarily at events that happened at Mount Sinai. Basically, the book of Exodus takes us from Egypt to Mount Sinai. The book of Leviticus is the law as it was given in Sinai. And then in Numbers, they come to the land, refuse to enter, wander for 40 years, Deuteronomy is in preparation, and then Joshua is when they actually go into the promised land. So here we're at Sinai. And as we read, and here in chapter 32, we see that Moses went up into the mountain to hear from God and to get the law. Now, don't think of a mountain as being a mountain. It's a little hill, basically. There weren't mountains in that area at all. But he goes up into this hill, tells the people, you know, wait right here, I'll be right back. And he goes up, and it turns out the law was probably a lot more extensive than he expected. God gave him, among other things, the Ten Commandments, which God himself carved onto two tablets, so that's kind of cool. 10 rules, but then all kinds of other laws. So he's probably scribbling down. Joshua's with him. He's, okay, you remember this part about the pigs, and I'll remember about lobsters. And so they're getting the law down. But while they're gone, the children of Israel are like, I don't know, last time we saw Moses, he headed up in the hills, and then we're like seeing lightning and stuff. I think he's dead. And so they're like, okay, what do we do? I guess we're going to have to try another god. How about an old Egyptian god? And they're making demands of Moses' brother Aaron, who's kind of his right-hand guy, but a total bozo. He's, think like Billy Carter kind of connection, if you're old enough. And so they're like, okay, Aaron, what do we do? And Aaron goes, well, I'll tell you what, give me all your gold. So all the women and the men gave their earrings in. So it's like all this gold. And Aaron crafts for them this amazing golden calf. And they're like starting to worship it. And so he uses some syncretism really where he's like, okay, let's call this Yahweh, the God who delivered you from Egypt. This is a picture of him. Turned it into an idol. And it got out of hand, and the people start worshiping and celebrating around this golden calf. And Aaron's like, he's not much of a leader. He's a good talker. And so he's like, oh boy, what do we do? Well, at that moment, God saw it, and he changes from giving the law to telling Moses, you got a problem, Moses. So he's up there on Sinai. He doesn't see what's happening, but look in chapter 32 when God said to him in verse 7, and the Lord said to Moses, go, get down. He didn't mean go dance with the people. It was like, no, get down off the mountain. For your people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made themselves a molded calf and worshiped it and sacrificed to it and said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. And the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and indeed it is a stiff-necked, stubborn people. Moses is like, yeah, you're telling me. Now, therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, and I will make of you a great nation. Can you imagine God saying, Moses, let me at him. Let me at him. I'm gonna go after him. Kind of different than what we think of God, really, but that's what he says. So, but catch what he says. He goes, Moses, your people have blown it so bad, they're worshiping the calf and saying it's me, and I'm going to kill them. And I'm going to make, instead of the children of Israel, I'm going to make the children of Moses. You're the only guy that I can trust, so you and your family are going to be the ones that I use. Now, I don't know what Moses is thinking at this point. Part of it might be, I have to take my relatives, my brother, my weird wife who's a pagan, but at any rate, look at how he responds to God. It's kind of shocking, really. He says, after God said, I'm going to consume them, and I'm going to make you a great nation. Verse 11, then Moses pleaded with the Lord his God and said, Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people, whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? So the first thing Moses says is, what do you mean my people? These are your people. You can't blame this on me. It's like when your parents and, you know, one of your kids does something really stupid, and you feel like saying to your spouse, your kid did this. So that's God. God's going, your people, and Moses goes, no, they're your people, God. And then he goes on to say, not only are they your people, but he said, if you do this, what are the Egyptians going to think? I mean, we just presented this big thing to the Egyptians. You did all these plagues and all these wonders, and they finally gave in. You killed a bunch of people in Egypt just so that they could know that you're the real God. And what are they going to say if we leave Egypt and a couple months later we die in the wilderness? What's that going to make you look like to the Egyptians? Our witness will be completely blown. But then he says, God also, not only are they your people and this will blow your image, but he said, how about all those promises that you made? How about all this through Abraham and Isaac and Jacob that your seed is going to produce a messianic line? And you know, it was specifically predicted Messiah would come through the tribe of Judah, not through the tribe of Levi, that would be my family if we take over and become the one. So God, you've promised, and you will be violating that promise if you do this. So Moses makes a pretty gutsy argument to God and gives him several reasons why, God, you can't do what you're planning on doing. And then look at this. As he presents his argument, verse 14, one of the most, I mean, it's a crazy verse. So, based on these arguments, the Lord relented from the harm which he said he would do to his people. Whoa. God changed his mind. God decided on the basis of Moses' argument that he wouldn't do it. Now, about this time is where preachers are supposed to insert a bunch of theology to tell you why this doesn't really mean what it seems to say. And they'll come up with theories like, you know, probably what it was God knew what Moses was going to do, and so he acted like he was going to destroy the people just to prompt Moses to prove his loyalty to the people, and this was all kind of a ruse. Now, that might settle with you and your theology, but I have a greater problem with a God who's using sleight of hand, who lies to Moses to get Moses to do the right thing. I have a greater problem with that than the idea that God might actually think about doing something and then actually not do it in response to the prayers of somebody who's righteous. So, but again, we're looking at the story. So if you want to redefine the story with your nice, clean theology, you go right ahead. I'm just saying, this is what the Bible says. And for me, I don't read the Bible through the lens of my theology. I want to write my theology out of what the Bible says. So if you do otherwise, you're welcome to it. But so what happens is God's like, you're not going to believe it. The people have just built a golden calf and they're worshiping it. And they're saying it delivered them from Egypt. I'm going to kill them. And I'm going to make you a great nation. And Moses is like, no, I don't want to be a great nation. You can't do this. Come on, man, you've promised things. And those are your people. And he's just bringing out all the stops to talk God out of it. And it works. So then as you read on in chapter 32, Moses heads down the mountain. And I don't know if when he heard God say they made a golden calf and they're worshiping it, if he really conceived of how deep this was sinking into the people. If he really, because as soon as they're coming down the mountain, he and Joshua, they're going, what is that noise? It almost sounds like a war. And then Joshua's going, I don't know, it sounds like a party. Sounds like there's a rock concert down there or something. And they round the corner and they see the children of Israel just probably intoxicated. They're just dancing. It looks like a Jewish Burning Man festival, just with people all out of control. And Moses is like, he had been just defending them, but now he's like so mad. He takes the, I mean, the original edition of the Ten Commandments. And he just spikes them like a football in the end zone. And he's like, ah! And he goes down and he grabs this golden calf and he smashes it and grinds it into powder. And everyone's just like, boy, you sure ruin a party, don't you? And then he puts it in the water and he makes people drink it. And then he goes, Aaron, what in the world were you thinking? Why did you let them do this? And Aaron, he's a great talker. He's not much good for anything else. He goes, I don't know. They gave me all their jewelry. And so I threw it in the fire and this calf came walking out. I mean, doesn't it sound like a lie that your four-year-old used to tell you? And Moses is just like, this is ridiculous. And he draws a line in the sand and he says, listen to everyone. Who is on the Lord's side? Step across this line. And the only people who stepped across the line were some of the Levites, which Moses was from the tribe of Levi. So was his brother Aaron, obviously. So that means, oh, great. You draw a line and go, who's on God's side? And Aaron's like, yeah, me, I'm here. Wait, you just made the golden calf. But Moses is still mad. And so he says, you guys get your swords and start killing people. Now, he probably was designating the people who were performing this pagan ritual. Kill them. I don't care if they're your relatives. Kill them. Somewhere along the line, because at the end of the chapter, it talks about God plaguing them. So people may have died as a combination of the Levites' swords and God maybe plaguing them at the same time. But it's like Moses is mugging the people and God jumps in and is helping out. But then the next thing you know, Moses is pleading for the people. He's like, look down in chapter 32, down in verse 31, it says, Moses returned to the Lord after all this bloodbath. And he said, oh, these people have committed a great sin and have made for themselves a god of gold. And God's like, yeah, I know. Yet now, if you will forgive their sin. And then he interrupts himself. But if not, I pray, blot me out of your book, which you have written. Wow, what a change of heart. Moses is like, kill them all. After God had said, I'm going to kill them all. And Moses is like, no, 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 don't do it. Now he says, God, please forgive them. Please show mercy toward them. And here's the deal, God. You talked about the fact that you wanted to kill them and make me in charge and make me the leader of a great nation. He said, if you're going to kill them, kill me too. Wipe me out of your book. It reminds me of when the Apostle Paul was talking about his Jewish relatives that he loved so much, but who had rejected Jesus as the Messiah. And Paul said, God, I would rather that God would send me to hell if it meant my relatives would go to heaven. How many people have that kind of dedication? It's an incredible heart that Moses is showing here. And then God goes, I'm just going to kill the people who are guilty. And, I'm not going to kill everybody else. And then in the beginning of chapter 33, it's like, okay, it's time for you to go to the promised land. They should have been there in a few weeks. And so, but what happens in chapter 33, we see an amazing story that Moses had pitched a tent outside the camp. So it wasn't close to everyone else. And he called it the tabernacle or the tent of meeting. And Moses would go out to that tent to spend quality time with God. And it said, you know, there in chapter 33, that people would see the pillar of cloud go to this tent. They would see Moses heading to the meeting place. And the people would all, like, go to the door of their tent and kind of worship from home. They didn't actually go to the tent of meeting, kind of like people who watch a live stream on the internet. And so he goes there. There's this pillar cloud. Joshua was hanging out. And look at what it says in verse 11 of chapter 33. So the Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend. And then he would return to the camp. But Joshua, who was going to be the next leader, the son of Nun, didn't mean he didn't have a father, it was his dad's name. A young man did not depart from the tabernacle. So you get a rare glimpse of this personal relationship that Moses had with God. It was close, it was intimate, it was deliberate. He went to a specific place, and it was like he and God would have this conversation the way you would have face to face with a dear friend. As you read on in the chapter, Moses is still not real secure in the whole thing with God, and so he says, you need to go with us if we're going to go. And God goes, I'm going with you. And then Moses said there in chapter 33, verse 15, if your presence does not go with us, do not bring us up from here. God, if you're not going to be with us, we're not leaving. We'll just stay right here and die in the wilderness unless I know that you're going to go with me. Then he began to talk to God a little more, and he's going, I'm a little nervous about this because you're just kind of a voice. I haven't seen you. I mean, can you relate to that feeling of like, okay, God, I'm all in with my life, but what if I'm imagining you? What if this isn't, what if I'm just beautiful mind delusional kind of thing? And so he goes, God, I want to see you before we leave. And God goes, no, you can't see me. It would kill you. And he's like, come on, I want to see you. And God finally goes, okay, look, I'll put you in a cave, I'll cover it with my hand, and I'll go by really fast, and you're not going to totally see me, but you'll see my glory, because Moses has said, show me your glory. He said, you will see what's left after I leave, and you'll kind of see my backside as I shoot by. And so he does that, and then after that, chapter 34 on, the journey toward the promised land continues.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Once again, here's Pastor Dave.
When it comes to Moses, I think what a unique leader. No wonder they remember him as being one of the greatest leaders, if not the greatest leader of all times. Because when do you see a leader who has the kind of qualities that he has at the age of 80? See, most leaders, I'll tell you the truth, most leaders are narcissists. You know, that is, they love being the leader. And they see everyone who follows them as being pawns in their game. Now, a lot of leaders don't start out that way. They end up that way because, as Lord Acton said a long time ago, power tends to corrupt. And absolute power corrupts absolutely. And then he said, and therefore I have seen that most great men are also bad men. And that's just the way it is. You know, a narcissist is somebody who's in love with their own position. They love seeing their own face, hearing their own voice. They like being in that position of prominence. It's why people will spend millions of dollars of their own fortune in order to get the job as president of the United States that pays like $250,000 a year. It's why? Because I love me so much. I think I'm the one that should be doing this. And in every business and in every church and Christian organization and other organization, you will find over and over again that leaders tend to be narcissistic. Every leader except me. Just kidding. We're all prone to that tendency. But look at Moses. How many leaders do you know who would say, if you're not going to bless them, kill me? If you're not going to forgive them, I am going to be with them to the death. And even if it means that I can have a bigger group of people, and these people are rebellious, I want these people. These are my people.
Discovering balanced living through the Word of God, this has been The Balanced Word with Dave Raw. We'll have another great Bible story for you next time. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. Online at thebalancedword.com.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play.